Time now for Western Michigan at Work. Each Tuesday evening at this time, the Fetzer Broadcasting Company brings you the story of one of the industries or professions of Western Michigan, where you'll find Western Michigan at Work. This evening, we are to visit the pump division of the Eaton Manufacturing Company at Marshall. And now, here is your guide to Western Michigan at Work, Dr. Willis Dunbar.
Good evening. What is a pump? Well, that depends partly on where you were born and when you were born. When I was a boy and someone spoke about a pump, he meant the thing with a handle on that you pushed down and pulled up to get water. Possessing only a very hazy idea of the wondrous collection of gadgets which make up an automobile and make an automobile run, I have come to know that these include a water pump and an oil pump, because on occasion these have gotten out of whack on my car. On such occasions, I have taken the car to the garage, have called back some hours later, and have been assured that this mysterious device had now been replaced. At least the car ran. I never took the pains to see what the things looked like. My idea of a pump remained intact and still consisted of a thing with a handle that sometimes had to be primed. Now this may seem rather naive to those who are listening and happen to be mechanically inclined, but I have a sneaking notion that there are a great many of whose idea of a pump was the same as mine before I visited the pump division of the Eaton Manufacturing Company at Marshall. As I entered the plant, I more than half expected to see a pump that I could recognize, but I didn't. They did have on display in the waiting room several gadgets which were labeled as pumps, and I soon discovered that they constitute a rather widely employed device on automobiles and trucks. Eaton makes what is called a rotor pump. This is composed of inner and outer rotors, a shaft, housing, and a cover. The inner rotor has one less tooth than the outer rotor, which provides, I was informed, minimum surface speed at the points of maximum driving loads, unquote. Is that clear? Well, anyway, I found that those rotor pumps are now widely used in the automotive field to lubricate the engine, to operate convertible tops and window operating mechanisms, for automatic transmissions and other purposes. Eaton engineers at the pump division are constantly developing new designs for wider application of these rotor pumps. They've spent more than $1 million since the end of the war on new production equipment at this plant. The pump business has gotten so big that Eaton had to move out the manufacture of valves and transfer that over to Battle Creek. About 8% of the production at Marshall is aircraft bolts, a sort of a hangover from the war. Otherwise, the pump division makes only pumps. Of course, they turn out these pumps in tremendous quantities on an assembly line basis. The large modern plant is full of big machines which fashion these pumps. I saw one big machine with 10 tanks in which parts were dunked to prevent rust formation and deterioration. It's called a Lubrite machine. It works automatically, dipping the parts in each of these 10 tanks filled with a chemical of some sort for just the right period of time. All the workman has to do is to load it and unload it. Another fascinating machine, called an electronic hardener, can make a rod of so-called soft metal and harden any desired segment or segments of it. Then there's a hardness tester, which can tell you at a glance whether a metal is hard or not. The day I was there, they were installing a brand new machine which cost $110,000. It weighs 46 tons, had to be custom built, and was shipped to Marshall from Vermont, where it was made on its own special flat car. The finished product is sold mainly to automotive manufacturers, farm implement companies, and aircraft manufacturers. Ford, Willis, and Hudson take a large slice of the output. The factory employs at present about 210 people, with 60 more in the offices. Normal employment in the plant is around 350. Now, the reason for the current slump is not related to business conditions. It is incident to the transfer of valve manufacture to Battle Creek. Eaton, as a matter of fact, is making more pumps than ever before, about 70,000 a month. But some idea of the market for pumps may be gained by noting that the nation uses 120 million pumps per year. The Eaton pump produces a constant pressure with no pulsation. I was informed that it won't be long before you'll have a pump on your car that will make your window wipers swish at an even speed, whether you're driving fast or slow. That will really be an improvement. The Eaton Manufacturing Company had its beginnings back in the year 1911, when J.O. Eaton formed a corporation in New Jersey called the Torbenson Gear and Axle Company. Shortly thereafter, the company transferred its operations to Cleveland, Ohio. As the name indicates, the principal business was the manufacture of axles. It became one of the largest builders of truck axles in the country. Restless and full of energy and ideas, that wasn't enough to satisfy Mr. Eaton. His company began to branch out and acquire other plants, manufacturing automotive and railroad equipment of different kinds. Today, there are in all 11 divisions operating in 9 different cities in Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Canada. At Cleveland is the original axle division, also the stamping and heater divisions. Eaton purchased the Wilcox Rich plant in Battle Creek for valve manufacturing. A huge plant manufacturing springs is situated in Detroit. The company has a foundry at Vassar, Michigan, and plants at Saginaw, Kenosha, Wisconsin, Reliance, Ohio, and Windsor, Canada. Mr. Eaton, who is now well past his 75th birthday, is still active in the management of the company, which he founded 38 years ago. I found in Eaton's pump division at Marshall what seemed to me to be excellent labor management relations. The plant has been unionized since 1937, the union being the United Automobile Workers, CIO. In charge of personnel at the plant is Mr. Homer Hazel, a big, gruff, heavy-set fellow with whom I spent a delightful couple of hours during my visit. He used to be quite a football player. In fact, he made Walter Camp's last two All-American teams, 1923 and 24. Afterwards, he coached a while at the University of Mississippi. He has been in Marshall at this plant since 1934. He negotiated the first contract with the union back in 1937. There's no nonsense about Hazel, no highfalutin generalizations about labor and management. You get the impression that here's a guy who is hard as nails, but fair as they come. The master contract with the union covers 4 of the company's plants. The terms are printed in a little booklet which goes to all employees and which defines rather exactly labor management relations. Promotions are by seniority within the plant. Of course, the company may select any worker, regardless of seniority, for foreman or other executive jobs. A listing of employees according to seniority is kept in the plant. This is arranged on a loose-leaf card system. The white cards represent all plant employees actively at work. And incidentally, I noted that the employment of the man with the greatest seniority goes back to 1911. He is Lachlan Blair, chief storekeeper, from whom we're going to hear in just a moment. Blue cards represent those people who have been promoted to supervisory positions. Orange indicates those on leave of absence. Red is used to denote those on military leave. And the green cards show those who are laid off. In order to keep on the list, these people who are laid off have to report 4 times a year. When jobs are open, they're offered first to the men with the highest seniority. Whenever there's a vacancy, the job is advertised on the plant bulletin board for a period of 3 days. During that time, any employee may bid on it. Now, the rate of pay is indicated, and the job goes to that applicant with the highest seniority. I inquired of Mr. Heckler, one of the personnel men, whether this system worked satisfactorily. He said that it did, that in 95% of the cases, the man with the highest seniority proved capable of doing the job for which he bid. The union contract provides that employees shall deliver a day's work for a day's pay. Now, I inquired how it was determined what constitutes a day's work. Well, I learned that time studies are made by observing the output of an average man on the job, not the slowest, not the fastest. If the union does not agree on the findings, then they may make a study of the job themselves. But Mr. Heckler told me that this happens very seldom. Mr. Hazel said during our conversation that Eaton has a reputation for not making the employees fight for what they get. From what I was able to judge, both the union and the management have fair people on the bargaining committees. It is a matter of some significance that average employment in the plant is around 14 years. But speaking of labor management relations, one of our guests here in the studio this evening can speak with some authority on that subject. He is John DeMott, president of the union at the pump division of Eaton at Marshall for the past 2 years. Well, Mr. DeMott, how do you go about it to settle your grievances?
Well, each department is represented by its elected steward. And if the employee has a complaint, he contacts his steward. And if the complaint is justified, the steward confers with the foreman. If the foreman either cannot or doesn't settle the grievance, it's put in writing and goes to the shop committee and the labor relations office, and it becomes a grievance. If it's not settled there, it goes up each progressive step of the established grievance procedure until it's finally reviewed by the highest official of the company and the highest official of the union. This is all part of a regular grievance procedure of the contract.
How frequently, on the average, do these grievances arise, Mr. DeMont?
Well, I'd say about once a month on the average.
Now, what are your duties as president of the union over at Eaton and Marshall?
Well, I preside at all union meetings, sit in on all negotiations and bargaining, and otherwise help all the departments of the union that require assistance if I'm asked.
Do you sometimes have the feeling that you're a sort of a middleman between the company and your fellow workers?
Not necessarily anymore. We used to feel that way a little, but we feel that sometimes we're apart, but we think that we're all working to the same goal.
I see. And what is your job in the plant, Mr. DeMott?
I work in the pump repair department, and we service and repair and renew pumps that come in from the field for various reasons.
And how long have you been with the company?
About 23 years. I started at the Rich Steel Products in 1925, and later that became part of Eaton, and I was transferred to Marshall in 1931.
Thank you, Mr. DeMott.
Thank you, Mr. Dunbar.
Now I want to introduce our second guest, Mr. Lachlan F. Blair. He's the oldest employee in point of service, as I mentioned a moment ago. How long have you been in the employ of the company, Mr. Blair?
38 years.
38 years. It wasn't the Eaton Company back there when you started, I suppose.
No, it wasn't, Mr. Dunbar, although the Eaton Axle Company was organized in 1911. Around 1926, a plant in Saginaw and a plant in Detroit were consolidated and formed the Wilcox Manufacturing Company. This company then bought out the Rich Steel in Detroit and the Rich Steel in Battle Creek and became the Wilcox Rich Corporation, which finally became divisions of the Eaton Manufacturing Company.
I see. Now, what is your job, Mr. Blair, and what does it entail?
Supervisor of stores. Industrial storekeeping is entirely different from any other store, except probably a drugstore, as we carry most everything from paper towels to diamonds, consisting of approximately 5,000 items. The store is conducted as an ordinary business, being invoiced for every item received, and then credited with every item requisitioned out, so that we not only have to know tools, machine parts, and all the rest of the 5,000 items, but also have to have a knowledge of accounting.
Well, now I think by this time our listeners may have gathered from your speech, Mr. Blair, that you're a Scotsman. And they perhaps might like to know that you visited Great Britain last summer for the first time in 50 years. I'd like to have you give us very briefly some of your impressions.
Well, the first thing that attracted my attention upon arrival in Southampton was the extent of the ruins. This is more pronounced in the London area, which is where one sees block after block in complete ruins. And yet one cannot be surprised at this, for when you take into consideration that 30,000 bombs fell in the London area in 3 months. During the Blitz throughout the country, there was 87,000 civilians killed, 73,000 seriously wounded, and thousands of with lesser injuries which have never been tabulated. And 51% of these totals were in the London area alone. There's a small town in Clydebank on the River Clyde that was bombed in one night, and no less than 2,000 women and children were killed. So that we must give the people over there a lot of credit for their fortitude under such very trying circumstances.
Thank you very much, Mr. Blair. And that concludes our story of the pump division of the Eaton Manufacturing Company of Marshall. Next week, we visit a plant where home recorders and radio equipment are made, the Wilcox Gay Company of Sherlock.
You have been listening to another broadcast in the series Western Michigan at Work, presented each Tuesday evening at 7:15 by station WKZO, as another of its many broadcasts in the public interest.